Parshas Ki Seitzei. In the previous Parsha Shoftim, we learned how Moshe Rabbeinu told the Yidden many dinim about how to prepare for a war. And that's what this Parsha begins with. More dinim about what happens when the Yidden go out to war. Moshe said, Ki Seitzei La Milchama Al Oyevecha. When you will go out to war against your enemies, Unesanoi Hashem Elokecha Biyodecha, Hashem will give the enemy over into your hand. Yes, as long as the Yidden act properly, and they are acting the way Yiddish soldiers should act, as we have learned in Parsha Shoftim, then we are guaranteed that Hashem will surely make us win. In fact, this is hinted in the words Al Oyevecha. Moshe Rabbeinu did not say that the Yidden will go out to war im Oyevecha, with your enemies, but rather Al Oyevecha. Al means over them, on top of them. What does this mean? When the Yiddish army goes to war, we don't go to war just like the Goyisha armies. The Goyisha armies trust in their own power. Eilev Orechev, the Eilev Asusim. There are those who go with chariots and those with horses. Va'anachnu, but the Yiddish army, B'Shem Hashem Aleikenu Nazkir. We go with Hashem, and that's why we are the ones who are going to win. Yes. When we go out to war, we are to begin with, on top and above our enemies. And this is also a lesson for us. All the Yiddish Kindalach, and all the Yidden in the whole world, are part of Hashem's army. We are Tziv'ois Hashem, in the army of Hashem. And who is the enemy? We know who he is. The old infamous Yetzer Hara. He is the one who is always trying to harm us, trying to take us away from serving Hashem properly. Now, there are two ways that we can win over the Yetzer Hara. One way is Im Oyevecha. You try to argue with the Yetzer Hara and deal with him, trying to explain the Yetzer Hara why you want to serve Hashem. But the Yetzer Hara is so clever, he's going to outsmart you. He is going to try all the tricks just to get you to sin. And that's why a Yid is told, Ki Seitzei La Milchama, when you go out to war, to battle, and you want to win over the Yetzer Hara, then you must go Al Oyevecha, over him. Just jump over the Yetzer Hara, not paying attention to him whatsoever. That's right. As soon as the Yetzer Hara wants to come and give us some bad ideas, we're not going to try to think about those ideas. We're not going to argue with the Yetzer Hara. We're just going to ignore it, jump over it completely, and then we will win. For example, let's say you have some extra spending money, and you want to spend it on something very good. Either something to eat or something to play with. And just then, someone comes to your door and asks you for tzedakah. Well, the Yetzer Tov says, give it to him. He needs it for a poor family. They don't have even bread on their table. Go help him. But the Yetzer Hara might say, what? You're going to give away your spending money for another person? What are you going to get out of it? You will not have any good food from it. You're not going to get any toys from it. You give away that money, you're never going to see it again. Now, there are two ways to deal with this. One way is to argue back to the Yetzer Hara and say, well, Hashem promises that whoever gives tzedakah, Hashem is going to pay you back 10 times as much. And that person needs it for bread, for his family. They're starving. Well, I want it just for some nash or for some toy. So we're going to try to argue and convince the Yetzirah. But do you know what the Yetzirah is going to do? He's going to find some way to convince you that it doesn't really matter. You need the toy. You need the nash. Or he's going to say, well, you'll get tzedakah another time. So on and so forth. He's going to give you many, many excuses to get you to keep the money for yourself. So what are you supposed to do? The Torah says, al ayavecha. Just jump over him. That means ignore him. Just take that money and give it to the person who needs it so desperately for a poor, starving family. And the same thing is with many, many other mitzvahs. That when you're ready to do something good, and the Yetzer wants to stop you, don't argue with him. Just go do that mitzvah. And Hashem is going to guarantee you that you will succeed. Now Moshe Rabbeinu told the Yidden, if when they go out to war, it might be that after conquering a Goyish city, a Yiddish soldier will notice among the women one whom he would like to marry. Now why should a Yiddish soldier want to marry a Goyish woman? Well, the great tzaddik, the Oir HaChaim HaKadosh, answers this question. Hashem gave every Yid a Jewish soul, a Yiddish neshama. However, sometimes Hashem can take a Yiddish neshama and put it into a Goyish family. That's right, a baby who was just born in a Goyish family might get from Hashem a Yiddish neshama. Now, isn't that a big pity on a Yiddish neshama to be in a Goyish family? It's going to grow up just like a guy. Well, that's why Hashem gave a chance for a guy to become a ger. That is, that he should convert and become Jewish. Now, not any guy could become Jewish. Only a guy who was born with a Yiddish neshama. The Yiddish judges would ask many questions to this guy who wants to become a Yid. Why does he want to become a Yid? And they try to discourage him again and again and tell him how hard it would be for him to take upon himself all the mitzvahs of the Torah. If the Yiddish judges see that the guy still comes back and still wants so desperately to become a Yid, then the Yiddish judges can decide whether this person can become a Ger. And if the judges are Megayer him, they do convert him, then he becomes a complete 100% Yid. And he can marry a Yid and have children who are Yidden. The same thing is also with a Goyish woman. Now Moshe Rabbeinu told the Yidden, when you go out to war, if you're going to see a certain Goyish woman and you're going to want to marry her because you think that she has a Yiddish neshama and she could become a Yid, well then there are certain instructions what you must do. And if after doing all of these things, you see that she still wants to be a Yid, then you can convert her and marry her and she'll become your wife. The first thing is, you bring her home, and for 1 month, we're going to test her to see if she is interested in becoming a Yid. The first thing she has to do, she has to shave her hair, so she will not look beautiful anymore. Then she has to let her nails grow so long that they should look ugly. She should also take off the beautiful clothing and dresses that she was wearing during the wartime and put on clothes of an avel, a mourner. Now, why does the Torah want her to be dressed in such an ugly way? This is just in order to make sure that the soldier who's taking her home is not taking her home because of her outer beauty, because she's dressed nice or so, but rather it's because of the Yiddish neshama that's inside of her. So by taking away all of the beautiful things from her, and she looks so ugly for one whole month, you'll see if the soldier still wants her. And if after this whole month passes, he still wants her, that shows that he means l'shem shamayim, for the sake of the mitzvah of bringing her to Yiddishkeit. At the same time, it also helps her get used to the new Yiddish home in which she's now going to live. This also helps her to stop having to deal with any idols that she used to serve. Yes, this will be a month of preparation for her to become a giyores, a convert. Now, if she is willing to become a giyores who keeps all the mitzvahs in the first month, then she is accepted. But it does not mean that he can marry her yet. He has to wait 2 more months. And afterwards, he could marry her, and she becomes a Jewish woman who is now his wife. Now, let's say she does not want to become a geyidus. Let's say she does not want to convert and become a yid. Well, then, he is allowed to wait for her longer if he wants. But if she still insists that she does not want to become a yid, he must send her away as a free woman. And the Torah tells us that he is not allowed to make her work for him or to sell her as a slave to somebody else. Now the Torah tells us another din. We have already learned that when a father passes away and the children divide up the property, the Bechar, the firstborn, gets a double portion. That means double the amount of what each of his brothers are going to get. Now, let's say the father married 2 wives, Rachel and Leah. Now, let's say he loves Rachel more than he loves Leah. Later on, he had children from both wives. But the first one that gave birth was Leah, the second wife, who he does not like that much. She had a boy, Reuven, who was the Bechair. Later on, Rachel had a boy, Shimon. Now, is he the Bechair, since he is the first one from Rachel? Or is Leah's son, Reuven, the Bechair, since he was the first boy of the family? And the Titus says that we look at who is the first boy of the whole family, which is Reuven, the son of Leah. And that's why, even though the father does not like Leah as much as Rachel, yet, when the father passes away, and the children are going to take over his inheritance, the belongings, Reuven, the son of Leah, will get the double portion. And Shimon, the son of Rachel, will get a regular size portion, just like all the other children. Our Chachamim tell us of the following story. In the days of Alexander Mikdain, that is, Alexander the Great, the Yishma'elim came before him and told him that they have a claim against the Jews. Together with them came also the Canaanim and the Mitzrayim. A Yid by the name Geviha, the son of Kaisim, volunteered to speak up for the Jews. There they are standing in front of Alexander the Great. "Who's accusing whom?" Alexander asked them. The Yishma'elim spoke up. "Those Jews have no right to keep Eretz Yisrael. In their own writings, it says that a father must give the firstborn of a family a double portion, even if that firstborn is from the wife that he did not like. And we are all the children from Ishmael, who is Avraham's firstborn. Therefore, we deserve a double portion in the Holy Land. Majesty, Gavir asked Alexander, may the father give gifts to his sons according to what he likes while he is alive?
Yes, he may, said Alexander.
Then take a look, said Gavir. In the Torah, in Parshas Chayesara, it says that Avraham gave the land of Israel to Yitzchak during his lifetime.
Well, maybe he gave it to Yitzchak only temporarily.
No, answered Gavir. When Avraham gave over to Yitzchak Eretz Yisrael, he gave it to him forever. It says clearly over there that Avraham gave all his other sons presents and sent them away from Eretz Yisrael. So the land belongs to us, the Jewish people. And now we come to the mitzvah of Ben Soirer Umoire, the rebellious son. The Torah tells us, if two witnesses warned a boy who was 13 years old not to steal money in order to buy meat and wine, and afterwards they saw how he stole money from his parents and bought a big chunk of meat and a big bottle of wine and drank it down and ate the meat in a very disgusting way along with other gangsters, the parents are supposed to bring their son to the Beis Din. Over there, the boy is whipped. He gets Malchus. Now, if the son repeats these sins again, the parents have to again bring him before the Beis Din. And now the boy is going to be put to death. Of course, this is only if the boy did everything according to the conditions, as we're soon going to see. And the reason why he's going to be put to death is because the Torah sees what's going to happen in the future. A boy who goes to steal will eventually not just come to steal, but also murder in order to get whatever he wants. And therefore the Torah says, better he leave the world while he is still innocent than after he is guilty of a serious crime. Now, there are many conditions. First of all, the boy must be between 13 years and 13 and a quarter years old. If he's even a little younger or older than that, then he's not put to death. Second of all, he must have two living parents, because both parents are supposed to bring him to Beis Din. Another thing is, in order that the parents should be able to bring him to Beis Din, they cannot be crippled. They also have to be able to speak, so they're not allowed to be dumb. Also, they're not allowed to be blind or deaf. If any of these conditions are missing, then they do not put the boy to death. Now, did such a case ever happen? Well, according to some Chachamim in the Gemara, it's a very, very unusual case, a very small chance for this to happen. According to other Chachamim, it is impossible that this should ever happen, because there are so many conditions here, and they can never be all fulfilled. And even though such a case does not happen, we still have a mitzvah to learn this in the Torah, because by studying the Torah, we become closer to Hashem. And now Moshe Rabbeinu is telling the Yidden another din that has to do with the Beis Din. If the judges ever had to put a Yid to death by stoning him because of a certain avera, a sin that he has done, the Beis Din is supposed to take him afterwards and hang him up that everybody should see. And then they take him down and they bury him. And the Torah says, never leave his body hang overnight, because that will be an embarrassment for Hashem. Why an embarrassment for Hashem? Because we are the children of Hashem, and seeing a Jewish body hanging on the gallows makes it look bad for Hashem. To understand this better, Chachamim give us a parable. There was once a king who had a twin brother who looked exactly like him, but The brother became a robber and was later caught, put to death, and hanged. Now, since he looks like the king, whoever sees the hanging body thinks, hey, that looks just like the king. So it's an embarrassment for the king. The same thing is every Yid. We are a reflection of Hashem. We are Hashem's children. And that's why Hashem does not want that the body of a Yid should hang overnight. So what the court would actually do, right before sunset, they would hang him up and right away take him right down and bury him. Yes, it's a mitzvah to bury him right away. And that's why if there is no one there to bury him, it's a mitzvah for every Jew to bury him. This is called Meis Mitzvah. And now we come to a very important mitzvah called Hashavas Aveda, the mitzvah to return lost property to the owner. If a Yid ever finds something which is worth at least a penny, he has a mitzvah to return it to the owner. Now, if the thing has a name and an address on it, then you know for sure who is the owner. But let's say it has no name and no phone number or anything, then you still have the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda. You should let people know that you found a certain thing. You could say what it is. Don't say what it looks like. Don't say what color it is. Just say what it is. Let's say a wallet, or a toy, a game, or a sefer, or anything. And wait for someone to come. If somebody comes to you and says, oh, I heard you found a wallet. I lost a wallet. Yes, can you tell me what color it is, and what size, and how many pockets does it have? And if the person tells you all the details exactly as it is in the wallet, then you can give it to him, because you can trust him for sure that he's telling the truth. Because otherwise, how would he know all these details of the wallet if he never saw it? Now, let's say you found a living thing, a chicken, a bird, an animal, and you don't know who it belongs to. So you take it home until you find the owner. But meanwhile, the chicken has to eat. So you're going to go buy him food. Now, how much food should you buy for him? For how many days? Should you keep the chicken in the house and take care of him and spend more money than the whole chicken is worth it? Let's say the chicken is worth $10, and to feed the chicken and keep it alive will cost much more. So then you're supposed to take the chicken to the market, sell it for $10, and hold the money until you find out who was the owner of that chicken. The same thing is also, let's say you found a basket of fruits, or delicious bread, and baked goods, and you want to return it to its owner. Now, if you're going to take it home and wait till the owner comes, the food or fruits and vegetables might get rotten. So then you have a mitzvah to sell it in the market and keep the money and hold it until the owner of that basket will come for it. Now, in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, there was a special place outside Yerushalayim where they had a big lost and found place. That is, whoever found something or whoever lost anything would come over there, they would announce what they found, and those who lost anything will ask, did anyone find this and this thing? And that's how people were able to fulfill the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda. And after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, these announcements are made in a shul or in a Beis Medrash. And now comes another very special, important mitzvah. If while you're walking on the road, you meet another Yid who's trying to load a heavy burden on an animal or on another man's shoulder, you have a mitzvah to help him out. Also, if he meets another Yid who is unloading, and there is no one else to help, he must also help him. Yes, the Torah teaches us to have mercy on every Yid. As our Chachamim say, Kol hamerachim al habriyos, merachmin alav milmaila. Whoever treats others with mercy will be treated by Hashem with mercy. Now, let's say you're walking and you meet two Yidden. One is loading his animal, and the other one is unloading the animal. Which one do you have to help first? The answer is, it's a mitzvah to help the one who's unloading the animal. And do you know why? Because the animal worked so hard schlepping the load, you want to help the animal to get the load off as soon as possible. But there is one exception. Let's say the one who's unloading is your friend, and the one who's loading an animal is someone who you don't like. Then you're supposed to go to the one that you don't like and help him first, even though he is the one who is loading. And do you know why? You got the right answer. In order to win over the Yetzirah. The Yetzirah is the one who makes us not like another Yid. Because the Torah says, you must love every Jew. And it's an Avera to hate a Yid. And that's why we're supposed to go first to the one that our Yetzirah does not let us like, to help him. And that will give a real good beating to the Yetzirah that he should let us alone and that we should have true Ahavas Yisrael. And now the Torah tells us a few more important dinim. A man and a woman have special clothing that each one wears, and they're not allowed to switch. A Jewish man is not allowed to put on garments that are usually worn by women. A Jewish woman is not allowed to wear men's garments either. Achachamim tell us that a man may not do certain things that a woman does for her appearance, to make herself look nice. A man is not allowed to pluck out white hairs, he's not allowed to wear women's jewelry, and he's not allowed to shave off hair that's usually removed by women. Now we come to the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKan. If a Yid finds a kosher bird's nest with little baby birdies in it, or eggs, he's not allowed to take them if the mother bird is still in the nest. Rather, he must first send away the mother bird. And if the mother bird returns, he must send it away again. Only then may he take the little birdies or the eggs. And for doing this, the Torah tells us, L'ma'an yitav lach v'ha'arachta yamim. So it will be good for you, and you will have long days. What does this mean? Al Achachamim explain it. When a mother bird is sent away from her nest, it flies without rest over the hills and valleys. It cries bitterly for being separated from its children.